Okay, good morning, gentlemen. We got into the new topic. As we mentioned, the last pasuk in Perek Vav, and the first pasuk in Perek Zayin, we just started into it yesterday, is the transitionary psukim between the conquest of Yericho that happened in Perek Vav and the subsequent great fall that happened to the Jewish people with the war in Ai, in Perek Zayin. And there's two psukim that were coupled together. The last pasuk in Perek Vav says that Hashem was with Yoshua and his fame spread throughout the land. And then the first pasuk in Perek Zayin says, and the Jews did a great sin by taking away, by desecrating that which was consecrated, and Ochon took from the Cherem, took from that which Yeshua consecrated, and Hashem was angry at the Jewish people. And this is a two psukim, and it's its own parsha. In the Masorah, it's its own parsha. It's got its own set off by space before it and afterwards. And the rabbis tell us that the word vayehi, which we find two times, is a lashon of tsar, is a lashon of suffering. Now, what's going on? We just ended Perek Vav, and the Jews are at the top of their game. They got the greatest fame. Yericho has fallen. That's after the waters split, etc., etc. Everything's going their way. All of a sudden, they come to a rinky-dink little city like Ai, as we'll see how insignificant it was. And the Jewish people lose a battle, right, after such a great victory. So we were reading inside the booklet from Parshios B'Sifrei HaNeviim. So we're going to continue in that booklet. And we gave them out a while ago, and it seems that we never ever have them after we give them out. I don't know what happens. What? Somebody does a good job cleaning up here. I don't know who. But we gave you sheets about a couple weeks ago. And page Nun Dalad, right at the top. I don't know where they go. It's unbelievable. Uh-oh. Okay, we're going to have to make more copies. All right. Too badly the book is out of print, or else we would have ordered the book. It's just, you cannot get the book, and it's unfortunate that, you know, you'll never have this book, and it's a good safer, so we're not violating any copyrights here, because you can't buy it anyway, so there's not taking away any parnassa from anybody. Anyway, so you just have to listen then. We're at page Nun Dalad, the fourth line. So, B'nesivas regilas, under normal circumstances, b'mochamas b'ne umos, when we're dealing with wars between nations. So, if you're doing well and all of a sudden you lose a battle, how do you react normally? You know, your armies are doing well and you lose a battle. How do you react? She says, "Ein b'maka kazu siba lehismotedus lomapala." Such a loss will not be a cause for a total collapse of the country. As it says in Shmuel Beis, it says, kazel kazel tolachev, that on both sides, the sword eats up both sides. There's casualties in battle, man. It's not the end of the world. We'll see, though, that Yeshua gets very, very nervous about this. So now, let's look what's going on here. Ma kara be'etzem, what actually happened? We'll see. We're reading ahead, because we didn't read it in the psukim yet. We're just going to tell you. Naflu shloshim v'shisha ish, mibein rivos lochem Yisrael. Amongst the thousands and thousands of soldiers that the Jewish people had, how many people fell in this battle? 36 people. So what would we say? We'd say, hamasa al ha'ai lohoya misuchnan karoi. We could say that the battle plan against Ai was not misuchnan, was not planned properly. Hamaraglim tovahar chasam. The spies maybe made a mistake in their valuation. You know, they said, you know, we don't have to send so many people. Well, maybe they didn't realize that they're really tough fighters. So they maybe made a mistake in their plans. Yisrael adayim ena menusim dayat tzarech bekarvus. Maybe the Jewish people, they're not battle-tested enough. Not strong enough in battles yet. Shalchu l'sham pachas miday lochem. They sent too few soldiers. So Mal Yeshua also. So what should Yeshua have done if they lose this battle? Yimna Vadas Chakira. They should appoint an investigation committee. Ah, that's what you never is a mistake, right? Appoint a committee, we'll research, we'll spend billions of dollars, so we'll find out what it was. We'll bring recommendations. Yasiku maskanas, they'll give recommendations. Ve'afiku es alecha mechlishon. And let's just learn what there is to learn from this mistake. Ve'pam haba, yischashvu b'lokachim. So in the future, they'll take into consideration what they learned. Ubekach tistayim parshim lo. And that's how you end a forlorn situation. That's what normal people would do. But that's not what Yeshua does. Not at all what he does. So why is that? Why are we going to have such a different story? Because it says, Rak pasuk hamavui. But this introductory pasuk that says, Vayihi Hashem es Yeshua, Vayihi Shama b'chol aretz, that Hashem was with Yeshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. Yochel lahasbalanos god la'asim. That could explain to us the greatness of the tragedy. Biladav, without those psukim, ein lahavin klal, we can't understand. We can't understand why it says Madua Yeshua, why it relates in the battle Vayumas Levav Ha'am Vayhilamayim, that the hearts of the people melted and turned into water. Meaning to say, believe without this earlier understanding of Vayhi Shama B'chol Aretz, that his fame spread throughout the land. Ein Lavin Klalas Tfilaso HaMizazeas Shel Yeshua. It's going to be hard to understand Yeshua's shaking prayer, where he says to Hashem, did you bring us into the lands of the Amorites to cause us to be destroyed? To cut off our name from the earth? What happened to your great name? In other words, Yeshua is extremely terrified. Why is he so terrified? Make a commission, make some changes, get a different general. Just do that. The answer is because they realize how much Hashem was with them. The fact that his fame spread so much, they realized that they should not be losing anything. Me'idach, on the other hand, lule ha-nistaros, without that which is hidden, in other words, there was some information that Yeshua did not know. Yeshua did not know everything that was going on. And without that hidden information, en klal tshuva l'dvar ha-margashim, there's no answer to his emotional plea. Shemal Yeshua b'tfilos that Yeshua makes in his prayers. Lo Yehoshua v'lo Yisroel m'sugom l'havin es asher korah. Not Yeshua, not the Jewish people. They're not capable of understanding what happened. Why? Ki lo yodu es anisros. They didn't know the hidden thing that happened. Ulechein, therefore, pona ha'kos v'lecha. So the pasuk turns to you. Halomed v'hakore Begilian Historis Lifnei Shetumas Aparsha. The Torah teaches you, the learner, the reader, and it reveals to you that hidden thing before you start the Parsha. In other words, it's kind of giving away the answer so we can appreciate what's going on and to appreciate the challenges that Yeshua was going through. In other words, we are ready. You know, like in these murder suspense mysteries or whatever, you know, you have something in the beginning, they show you something in the beginning that nobody else knows. Right? And then, oh, if they would know this and that. So that's the thing, Yeshua just doesn't know. Amnam, however, truly, Nachan hu shad achshav hay Hashem es Yeshua. Hashem was with Yeshua. V'sham hay b'chal aretz. And his fame spread through the land. Aval dalach, but you need to know Hakore, dear reader. Something happened. It was very, very bad. Lo yidias Yeshua v'ravam, without the knowledge of Yeshua and most of the people. Hayamal b'cherem, there was someone who desecrated that which was consecrated. Lachein hayacharanaf Hashem, therefore Hashem's anger came out. So it comes out that these two psukim explain the strange nature of this chapter that's coming up over here. Without these two introductory psukim, you start reading and you're having trouble understanding what's going on over here. So you got to realize that they were on such a high, they were feeling Hashem's closeness so much, and all of a sudden, it's just gone, and they suffer a terrible, terrible defeat. Why is it terrible? It's terrible in respect, in comparison to what success they had before, to such miraculous success, to all of a sudden be totally forsaken. That's shocking. And that only can increase the terrible nature of what happened. And therefore the lesson has to be learned in a much more powerful way than just making a committee. In other words, when the Jewish people lose a battle, it's not an issue for committees. It's not a committee issue, as we will see. There's a spiritual problem that has to be looked at. And that's, as we will go through the parsha now, we'll see how these issues are dealt with. Okay, let's move on now into the perek inside and see exactly what happens. Okay, perek Zion, pasuk beis. Now, it's like we pick up the story after this little introductory two verses that kind of, as I said, are the transition. We're going to have to see what goes on over here. Pasuk beis. Vayishlach Yehoshua anoshim miyericho ha'ay asher im beis oven mikedem lebeis kel vayomar aleihem leimor alu v'ragluas oretz. So Yehoshua sends men from Yericho ha'ay to the city of Ai, which is near a place called Beis Oven, which is to the west of Beis Kel. And he says to them, Alu, go up, v'ragluas oretz, and spy out the land. V'yalu anoshim v'ragluas oy, and the men went up, and they scouted out, and they spied out the city of Ai. We could assume it's the same spies he sent out before, Kalev and Pinchas, to spot out the land. Pasuk Gimel. V'yeshuvu el Yehoshua, they returned to Yehoshua, v'yomer lo, and they say to him, Al yal kol ha'om, we don't have to send out the whole nation. Kalpayim ish o kishloshes alofim ish yalu. We only got to send up around 2,000, 3,000 people. They can go up vayaku es ha'oy, and we could destroy Ai. They're a really easy pushover. Al tiyaga shames kol ha'om, don't wear out there the entire people. Kima adhema, because there's very few people in the city. We're not going to need that many soldiers over here. So, obviously the spies are not relying on any miracles now with the conquest of the city of Ai. They make an honest evaluation. You don't need to have a lot of soldiers, even going in normal, natural battle. Yeshua relies on them, and he says 2,000 or 3,000, okay, let's send 3,000 to be on the safe side. And they're going to go now from Gilgal. They come up past Jericho and now into Ai. Yeshua does not lead the troops into battle, but rather he prays for their success. Now it's interesting. Like, why don't you send the whole people anyway? You know, what would it hurt to get everybody involved in the battle? Well, we could possibly say that Yeshua remembered the lesson that he learned in the end of the fifth parak, when he dealt with the angel. Remember, the angel came to him with a sword and had complaints against him that you were taking the Jewish people away from learning Torah when the ark was out. So if you're going to take too many soldiers into battle, there could be a criticism. So why did you take so many soldiers out? You already see that Hashem is with you. So Hashem is with you. Okay, now you've got, so the first time Hashem, even then, He didn't send the whole nation out. He sent the soldiers, all the soldiers. Okay, there was a lot of soldiers in that battle of Jericho. And as naturally you'd figure there should be, because it was the stronghold. But now that you, and there was no criticism there, but the fact that you're going against a very small country, and Hashem is with you anyway, okay, you've got to go through the natural processes of war. But don't overextend yourselves, because then it's a criticism as to why you're taking away so many people from the study of Torah, why you're taking so many people away from their wives, that they can't be together with each other. And therefore, he wants to know what do we really need, and okay, we'll be on the safe side of what we need, but we don't have to overwhelm them. We'll overwhelm them with 600,000 soldiers and all this. So far everything seems to be reasonable. Although we'll see some chazal later that will tell us that maybe things aren't 100% reasonable. We will see. So it seems to be very easy, and they're just going to go through the motions that's necessary. There's no reason to think otherwise. So let's see what happens. Pasuk Dalet. Vayalu min ha'am shama kishloshes alafim ish. So approximately 3,000 people go up from the nation. Vayanusu, but when they come to the city, the result is not a good result. Vayanusu lifnei anshehoi. They start running away from the people of Ai. We're not intimately aware of all the battle that happened. We don't know exactly how. Could be the people of Ai just came right out screaming and yelling at them. Maybe they knew they were finished. Maybe they just start yelling and screaming and scaring them or whatever it was. But the Jewish people were not successful in the battle. Maybe the fact that they got opposition shocked them. I mean, you find in the Battle of El Alamein where Rommel was successfully going across everywhere, and what did the English, what did the British do? They really didn't do anything amazing at all. They just decided to fight first, strike first, right, and throw everything they had at them, even though maybe what they had wasn't the most, but it was an element of surprise. Okay, of course, the Kaddish Baruch Hu was involved also. Not going to minimize that. But, you can surprise someone. And the city of Jericho fell so easily, so they figured it's going to be for sure easy. All of a sudden, they start attacking you and not willing to die so quickly. You know, maybe that scared them, whatever it could be. But the result is in Pasuk K, Vayaku mehem anshehai kishloshim v'shisha ish. The people of Ai hit and killed from the Jewish people, approximately, it's very interesting how you can say approximately 36 men. How do you have approximately 36 men? Say approximately 40 men, approximately 30 men. Where's approximately 36 men? We'll see. Vayirdefu lifnei ashar ad ashvarim, and they ran from before the gate until a place called Shvarim. Vayakum b'morid, and they were going down a hill, so they hit them as they're going down the slope. Vayimas levavam, and the heart of the people melted. Vayihi lemoyim, and it turns into water. So, this is of course a very, very tragic episode. So what's going on over here? So what does it mean when it was approximately 36 people were killed? What's this kuf? This kuf approximately, and it's not the same as we had ki alpaim o kishlosha alpaim ish. When you say around 2 or 3,000, then you could say around. Say about 2 or 3,000. You know, you can estimate what 2 and 3,000 is. Maybe it's 1,950, whatever. But what's this approximation of 36? So the rabbis tell us, and if you look in your booklet, it brings us the source on page Nunhei. We're on page Nunhei, right? On the next page. How many pages do I have left in the booklet? These two sides, that's it. Okay, so if you look in the, about more than halfway down the page, in the very small print, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Tanya, it says, Shloshim v'shisha mamish. It was exactly 36, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. It was Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, says it was 36. Amar Rabbi Nechemya says, v'chishloshim v'shisha hoya. Was it 36? V'alo lo nemar, all it says is ela ke. Like kishloshim v'shisha ish, 36 people. Which you can't say approximately 36. Ke can't mean about, because 36 is pretty precise. So ke has to mean like, they killed like 36 people. As if they killed 36 people. But it wasn't 36 people. Elazeh Ya'ir ben Menashe. But rather it was one person, and who was this person? Ya'ir ben Menashe, the grandson of Yosef HaTzadik. Shish, and he must have been an old man. Ya'ir ben Menashe. Menashe was born when Yosef was 31 years old, right? And Yosef lived in Mitzrayim till he was 110. Certainly, and the Torah says he also saw his grandchildren. So, you know, this, and by the time Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, from when he came down to the lift, was 210 years. So this Yor was probably born sometime after Yaakov came. And let's say even later, so it was born when Yosef was, grandchild, 50, 60, whatever. Say he was at least 160, 170 when they left Mitzrayim. Right? And 40 more years than that is 210. He's an old guy. Chashuv a guy. Right? He was the head of the Sanhedrin. The head of the Sanhedrin. Shishakol keneged ruba shel hedrim. He's equal to most of the Sanhedrin, because the Sanhedrin has 71 people. a majority is 36. The head of the Sanhedrin is like equal to the Sanhedrin. So therefore, what really is going on, according to Reb Nechemia, this kaf, ki, like, meaning it's a descriptor, an ish, a person equal to 36 people. It was one person who was equal to 36, right? And therefore only one person died, but he was a Godel Hador. He was a grandson of Yaakov, after all. This is not a simple person, a grandson of Yaakov, who was the head of Sanhedrin. It's a terrible, terrible calamity to happen to the Jewish people. So, again, you know, we'll talk about this more, but, you know, so what's going on? We'll see this is all as a result because Achan stole from the Cherem, stole from that which was consecrated. But Achan sins, and he doesn't get punished, but rather others who don't sin, and they get punished because of him, right? And not only others, but it's the head of the Sanhedrin. So it comes out that the guy who's wicked and sins, he remains alive. And the best guy, the Jewish people, gets punished for the sins of others. It's a very unusual situation over here. Again, so the simple answer is ours is not to question the way of Hashem. Hashem understands, you know, what to do over here. But as we've already said before, when we crossed the Jordan River, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, and what this entire chapter on some level will explain, but not on every level, he says that when a person does an Aveira, you cannot say that everybody else is faultless and has no guilt, because depending on the environment that's around, depending on how the holy rollers live, that's what you get as a result. And if you have really people who are really kosher and holy and proper people, you're not going to get wicked people coming out of this. And therefore, who is really responsible for the fact that a Jew comes out bad? You have to say it's the responsibility of the congregation. Okay? And the congregation, if there's somebody who's a sinner who comes out of a congregation, it means the atmosphere of the congregation was not on the highest level. So therefore, who's in charge of the congregation, if not the head of the Sanhedrin? If not the head of the Sanhedrin, the head of the Sanhedrin, the one who it's the job of the Sanhedrin is not merely to paskin shilas, to answer questions that are difficult for everybody to understand. As we'll see later in Sefer Shoftim, the Medrash is very critical of the Sanhedrin and the leaders. But the job of the leaders is primarily to educate the people, to go around to the people, to see what potential problems exist. And therefore, the leaders are the ones that are most responsible for what happens. And therefore, indeed, Achan will get his punishment, but also the great leader is punished as well. And this becomes a very, very important lesson to remember. And we have to know why, you know, so Yarb, by being a head of the Sanhedrin, you know, had to speak up. And we'll see the fact that Yeshua made a chair, we'll see. We'll have to see if that was totally a proper thing to do as well. The Sanhedrin maybe should have argued with Yeshua, whatever. But be that as it may, the leaders do have to take responsibility. So why didn't Yeshua die, you may ask? Well, Yeshua wasn't in battle. Can't kill him if he's not in the battlefield, right? And then again, we need Yehoshua. He's the leader. So can't kill him. But somebody who also is a very important leader does get killed. And this makes a very big impact, obviously, on the people. So now let us see Yehoshua's reaction now to what happens over here. Pasuk Vav. So instead of making commissions and finding what's going on over here, Pasuk Vav tells us, Vayikra Yeshua Simlosav, Yeshua rips his garments, Vayipol Alponov, and he falls on his face, Arza, to the ground, Lifnei Aron Hashem, before the ark, Ad Ha'erev, until evening. Hu Vizikni Yisrael, him and the elders of the Jewish people, Vayalu Ofer Al Roshem, and they put dirt on their heads. Okay, tremendous, tremendous amount of mourning going on over here. And Yeshua is about to make a prayer. So let's take a look in the booklet at the bottom of page Nun Hey, and he explains something very interesting over here. Try to get you a feel for what's going on over here. So he writes and gives you a little background to some history as well. So the subtopic is called Koach Tfilasa Shel Avram Avinu, the power of the prayer of Avram Avinu. Halochamim Chozri Mukim Shfurim Vatsuvim L'machal Yeshua. The warriors come back beaten, broken, saddened, depressed. They come back to the camp. Umitasa Shel Zaken V'Gadol Hadoritam, and the coffin of the Gadol Hador, the great leader. Can you imagine, you know, Lahavdol, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein goes out to battle. You know, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky goes out. This is the kind of stature. They went out to battle and they get killed in battle. Can you imagine how deflating this is? It's such a tzaddik would die in battle. Ha'am adayin ein ha'tayfes mashakar. The people can't fathom what happened. How could this happen? This is really the first time a Jew was ever killed in war. You got to realize it's the first time. It never happened, such a thing, in the whole history of the Jewish people. It's only 40 years. But they had a few battles before against Sichon and Og. There was a battle against the Amalekis a couple times. The worst scenario that was recorded in the Torah was what? In Sefer Bamidbar, there was one person taken captive. A captive was taken. And the Torah made a big deal about it, to mention a captive was taken. It was the first time a person died in battle.
Jericho, not a single Jew.
Nobody died. Nobody died in battles. Not one. We don't appreciate, you know, how much God is with you. It's like these adventure movies, you know, where there's these great battles, you know, that you have, Lord of the Rings or all these things. You see 10,000 soldiers and 5 guys are fighting 10,000. None of them ever get killed, right? They just keep whooping them and killing them, and they never get killed. So what happens is the 4 or 5 heroes don't get killed, but the other guys get killed in battle, right? But the heroes, can you imagine, everybody is a hero. Nobody gets killed. And the city of Ai, you know, must have had, I don't know the numbers, must have been tens of thousands of soldiers. They all got killed. So I don't know, they got killed, they waved their swords, they killed them all. And that means there was tens of thousands who were putting up some kind of resistance. Nobody gets killed, right? And now one person gets killed. This is like unbelievable.
Rabbi, what about the 80% of the Jews who got killed because they didn't believe in Israel?
No, that is God had them die. They just went to sleep and died. They didn't lose to the hands of an enemy. That's a totally different scenario. I'm not minimizing the sadness at that time either. But then again, they were Rishoyim. There were people who were assimilating out. They could have been probably not part of the fold. It's Lahavdil. Chas V'Shalom, Hashem should spare me. You know, if before Mashiach comes, the secular Jews die. It's a tragedy, but it's not, quote-unquote, von unser Menschen. It's not from our Chevra. It's people who walked and talked like Egyptians. You know, they're Jewish, but in name only. You know, I'm not saying that's not a sad thing. I'm not saying it's not a sad thing. But they had totally left Yiddishkeit. They were assimilated. They weren't worthy of being redeemed. They probably walked and talked like, you may not even have known they were Yidden. A lot of times a Jew dies, don't even know they're a Jew. Only because their name is Schwartz. Otherwise you wouldn't even know it's a Jew. Right?
So you're talking physical battle, not spiritual.
Yeah. So God killed them. Listen, he killed, he did a lot of things. So the Jews, the 80% who died, they were totally assimilated Yidden. Remember, the ones who survived, who got out of Egypt, they didn't change their name, they didn't change their clothes, right? They didn't change their language. So the ones who didn't survive, they didn't dress like Jews, they didn't talk like Jews, they didn't have Jewish names. So how did they even know they were Jews? Right? They're not even going to act like a Jew. In no way, there was no vestige of them living like a Jew, acting like a Jew. So to the Jews, they may not even have noticed it. Well, you know, they could have been slaves, but nobody knows who they are, and they're not part of the Chevra. When it was time to get together to daven, they wouldn't daven, whatever. They weren't part of the Chevra. They were slaves who hung on, and there were those who gave up. And they gave up. They threw in the towel and want to be like an Egyptian, and there were Egyptian slaves. I'm sure there were non-Jewish Egyptian slaves, too. You think the Jews were the only slaves? There are lots of slaves. So there are slaves that are slaves. So that's not their problem. But more than that, but that's to be expected in Egypt. To be expected in Egypt, you know. And God kills them. Okay, God kills them. But you're going out to battle. It's the first time a Jew dies at the hands of... If you really, really think about this, if you really go back in your mind, when was the first time a Jew was ever killed by a non-Jew? It's the first time it ever happened. When was a Jew... Okay, besides saying what the Egyptians did in terms of that Holocaust in Egypt. Okay. But I'm saying in terms of, you know, battle, war, things like that. You know, and now, and it wasn't that we were a slave people. We were a free people now, under Hashem's guidance, with Hashem's protection, and all the blessings that Hashem promised to give us. Now, and a Jew dies, and not just a Jew, but the head of the Sanhedrin dies. So you got to really, like, you know, get, wrap your head around that idea that this is an immense tragedy. Okay, so the people can't even fathom what's happened. Turning the page now, Umashahaya owed Alulios, and what could liably happen from this? Right? Is this a sign of things to come? Rock, what happens? Vayimas leva am vayilamayim. The pasuk says their hearts melted; they became like water. They don't know what kind of terrible decree is coming up. They don't know what's going to happen. And we'll see in a minute how terrible this should have been. This is an unbelievable Gemara. Amar Rabbi Lazar says, La'olam yaktim adam tefila litzara. A person should always preface prayers before calamities happen. If you think you're going to get into trouble, pray before the calamity happens. Shel mole hiktim Avram tefila letzara bein beis kelo bein ai. Because had Avram Avinu, when we learn in the Chumash the travels of Avram Avinu, and there seem to be a few psukim in the Torah that don't really seem to be, we don't really understand the significance of the psukim as we read them the first time. It says that Avram is traveling. He's coming. We're dealing with the test of Avram Avinu. So Avram, he travels. He goes to the land of Canaan. He comes to Shechem, Elon Moreh. The Canaanim are in the city. Okay, I mean, look, what do we need to know these details? He goes from this place. He pitches his tent in Ai. Like, I mean, you know, that's nice. That's nice. So, but why do we need to know these little details? Just say he went to the Holy Land and he settled there, finished. And then there's a famine in the land and he left the famine in the land. What do we need to know these little details that he's in Shechem, he's in Ai, he's in this place, he's in that place? So the rabbis over there tell us, and that's what Chazal tells us over here, that Avram was davening in all these places. He had a Ruach HaKodesh, he had a divine understanding that there's going to be big, big troubles in these places. He had the spiritual sensitivity to be able to feel as he walked into Shechem, right? He knew that one day that Shimon and Levi were going to fight a war in Shechem and destroy Shechem, and that they would need his prayers. He knew that one day the Jews are going to be an eye and they're going to, they should suffer an unbelievable loss. An unbelievable loss. And he prays that nothing so terrible should happen. And that's what the pasuk says. Listen to this. She'il mole hiktim Avram tefila letzara be'beis kelo be'nai. Had Avram not prayed for the future calamity between beis kelo and I. And that's what the Torah goes out of its way. It gives such precise details. Barshas Lech Lecha. He moved his tent from there. From the east of Beis Kel, and he sets up his tent between Beis Kel on one side and Ai on the other side. And these were the very places of battle in which the pasuk just discussed for us. Mentions Beis Kel and Ai. He pitched his tent, meaning to say, and he prayed. He built a mizbech. Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He calls on the name of Hashem. Wasn't just doing kiruv. He was davening. Had he not prayed, listen to this. Lo nishtayer merisha Yisrael. This is a, what do you call it, a euphemistic term. there would not be remaining, it says from the wicked of Jews, but that we don't want to say this about Jews, but it really means from the Jews. Lo nishtayer mi rishay Yisrael, there wouldn't be left from the Jews, sarit upalit, any remnant. Had he not prayed, the Jews would have got wiped out in this battle. That's what happened. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? After Yericho and everything's going so fine, God would have wiped them all out. Totally. Finished. Had Avraham Avinu not prayed for them. So Chazal are indicating to us the immense nature of something is very, very wrong over here. What is it? And Yeshua doesn't. And Yeshua understood the fact that one tzaddik dies. He understood it was plenty bad. And he probably knew about, then all of a sudden maybe Avram's prayers and what Chazal are telling maybe dawns on Yeshua. This really could have been a much worse event than what was going on over here. Unbelievable. Now, what does the Sefer say? Avraham Avinu bechnasol aretz. Avraham Avinu, when he came into the land, same thing, so you got to realize that when Avraham Avinu came to the land, he was blazing the path for the Jewish people who would be coming into the land. Whatever Avram did, Maisa Ava Similabanim. That's what the rabbis say, that whatever the patriarchs do, it's a sign for the children coming up. So he needs to conquer the land in his way. That will lead, in the future, will be a sign for their conquest. So Rabbi Ruach Kacho, he saw with his divine insight, as Knisas B'nei Banav Laretz Bod Kam Yashan, how the Jews would enter hundreds of years later. He prophesies, Rashi says, that the Jews would stumble because of the sin of Achan. And Rashi tells us over there, he davened for them. Had it not been for the prayers of the Alter Zedi, Lo Nishtair wouldn't be left one yid after this battle. Ad Kirei Kach. That's how terrible it was. A decree of destruction of an entire people stands because of the sin of one person. That was hidden from all. God, your justice is beyond what we can fathom. What divine justice really is all about. How that is possible. Right? But on the other hand, we see on the one hand how terrible what was going on over here. On the other hand, we say, Uma adir koach tfilasa shel zaken. How beautiful is the power of the prayer of the elderly Avram. Osa tfilas yispal Avram avinu ben beis kelo ben ayal b'nei bonav harachokim b'eish adayim lohoi lo zera klal v'zman shadayim lohoi se shum ilo l'gzera kosha. Avram prayed hundreds of years. This was a long time. 400 was 400 and almost 440 years. More, 455 years. 455 years before this event happened, he prayed. He prayed for children he didn't have yet, for a situation that didn't come. There was no reason even for the decree to happen. That's how much a prayer is worth. Now they understood, why did Avram do that? They have this tradition. They already had the Torah by then. They already had the Torah. They already had the five books of Moses. It says, wow, he went over there, he built the Mizbech. I wonder why Zaidi did that. Why did Zaidi do such a strange thing? Only now, in retrospect, did they understand why Avram did what he did. Right? And that's what the Medrash says. Vayiven Sham, Avram Avinu, he built there, going back to Bereishis Yud Beis, Pasuk Ches, Mizbech Hashem and Altar Hashem, he built the altar, Shlo Yiplubanov, so that his children should not fall in battle. Ha-harei-ho dichsiv, and that's what the Pasuk means over here, so we're going to get to tomorrow, or we did already, today rather. Vayikra Yeshua Simosov, Yeshua ripped his clothes. Vayipo Aponav Arza, he fell his face to the ground, Lifnei Hashem Ad-Arev, Who's Bnei Yisrael V'yelu Afra Roshem, they fell to the ground, and they put what on their heads? Dust. Why dust? Amar Rav Elazar ben Shmuel, Elazar ben Shmuel says, Hischilu maskirim zchus shel Avraham Avinu. The first thing they did was mention the merit of Avraham Avinu. What does dust have to do with anything? Shenemar, because what's the classic line that Avram said to Hashem? Vanochi afar ve'efer, I am yet but dust and ashes. So they acted like the Zaydi. Klum bana Avram Mizbeach ba'ai, el shal yiplu bana v'ai. Was there any reason why Avram had to build a Mizbeach? Only said his children shouldn't fall in eye. So you see a lot of things over here. Number one, you see what it means, what a taka means to be a Zaydi. What a taka means to be a Zaydi. That when you're a Zaydi, you have to think about, you have to daven not just for ones you see, but for ones you don't see. If the daven generations down, say, what do you see in the future? What could possibly go wrong in the future? If the daven Hashem and how the prayers of a Zaydi are so special, even before the situation happens, and if anything, they're more efficacious when you pray. That's how important a tefillah is. We have to pray for generations beyond ourselves. But what was the idea over here that they are? So they recognize that. So what does that do? What is this nostalgia time? I mean, so now they're putting some dust and ashes on their foreheads. So they're trying. So what are they doing? So the one of the Mephorshim says a very real shot, and we'll end with this. He says, "What are we trying to remember the merit of Avram? Because they're trying to figure. We know we did something wrong. We had to do something wrong. We had to have done an avera for us to lose in battle. Figure what could it be? So they figured perhaps we've." After the battle in Yericho, maybe we became a bit arrogant. Maybe a streak of gaiva. Oh, look who we are. Look how mighty we are. Right? And that's how the Mephorshim explained the davening before, at the end of Marav, before the Shmoneh Esrei. We say, Vaseir Satan Milfaneinu Macharenu. Take the Satan away from before us and from after us. What does it mean, take the Satan away from us, before us and after us? Because we know when a person wants to do a mitzvah, what does the satan do before you do a mitzvah? He says, what do you want to do this mitzvah? It's not such an important mitzvah. It's not such a big deal. You know, it's a little thing. Say, what are you going to accomplish by doing this little mitzvah? So he figures that's a big deal, so you might as well not do it. Right? But after you do the mitzvah, what does he do? He says, wow, you did an amazing mitzvah, man. That was such a hard mitzvah. You know how great you are? You're unbelievable. You're great. You're the best. And now he wants you to become arrogant. So that's where we have to ask Hashem, you know, he makes the mitzvah bigger than what you even did. Because what's going to happen? You're going to become arrogant. And when a person becomes arrogant, we know that Hashem leaves such a person. Because the Gemara in Sota says, anybody who has gasus ruach, anybody who's arrogant, Hashem says, me and him can't live in the same world. So that's a big risk after you do a mitzvah. You want to take pride in what you do. That we have to worry about that Yetzirah too. So Yeshua is thinking that we conquered Yericho and we obliterated the city and we didn't even enjoy anything from the city. Look how l'shem shamayim we are. Look how unbelievable tzaddikim we are. So maybe a little tint of arrogance came amongst us, and once you become arrogant, then what happens? Then Hashem leaves you. So as he's about to pray to Hashem and ask for rachamim, he tries to evoke the memory of Avram Avinu, which is Avram Avinu, we know. He says, what am I but dust and ashes? He was such a humble person that perhaps whatever prosecution is against us, maybe because we're a little bit overly arrogant, that Hashem should help us, and now we'll do tshuva ready, and we'll humble ourselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fall before him, put ashes on ourselves, try to live like Avram. It was Avram's tefillah that saved us, meaning to say maybe we have to act like Avram to be saved. So that's what they begin to do. Tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem will begin the tefillah of what Yehoshua prayed before HaKadosh Baruch Hu.